Hello, and welcome to Cult Picks Radio, WCPX 66.6, with me, your host, who never forgets to rewind, Django Nudo.
This is the Smart Peddler. Be kind, rewind.
And this is Kitty Lash, who never rewinds, really.
Bad kitty.
Yes,
you're going to get told off in the Blockbuster or video store.
Yeah, let him catch me.
See, kids are not going to know, or maybe they do because they've watched on Stranger Things, you know, the whole idea of why would you need to rewind a film? Mm. You switch it on and off. Yeah. But kids, adults, anybody listening, we're going to take you back to the halcyon heydays of home entertainment of the 1980s when VHS ruled the entertainment world. It's going to be VHS mania. It's a tribute to the just concluded long hot summer of VHS non-classics, because the films that we featured were films that, for whatever reason, never made the transition to DVD, Blu-ray, DCP, any format better than crappy 300 plus lines NTSC. And there's some strange, some little oddities, some cuties, but we thought we're going to be kind and not let history forget these films, the filmmakers, and some of the actors and actresses of it. So who do we have to look forward to hearing about? Anybody want to pick up the notes?
Could just mention Britt Ekland is, of course, a compatriot of you and me. And I mean, she was quite a star in the day, and she was married to Peter Sellers, I think. And her career sort of dwindled when she turned 40, and you couldn't get those beautiful young woman roles, so she was in a lot of B-movies. But I just want to add also that her brother runs, quote, the coolest record store in the world, Pet Sounds, according to Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, really? The Pet Sounds?
Yep, that's Britt's brother.
In Stockholm? Yep.
Mm, yeah. So Tarantino used to come there incognito on holiday just to, you know, sift through the vinyl. True story.
But back to the dead format of VHS. So it is a kind of phenomenon in its own. And I'm going to kick it off by saying VHS was a shit format. Fight me.
Yeah, I will. You have to go back in time to a time when there is no recording. When you want to see a movie, you see it in the cinema. And when it's gone, it's gone. So anything, that even a crappy format, was great if it meant that you got to see a movie that you really loved. I remember buying The Man with Two Brains in every single format there was. And then there was Beta. And then my cousin had those big discs, which were great. You know, those big gold
laser discs.
Laser discs, which were huge and impressive and expensive and about as big as an LP. But then there were the machines that could play Beta and VHS, and VHS won. And I'm not really quite sure why it did. I think it was probably cheaper. But VHS is the 8-track cassette of the movie world. And where would we be without it? I hate to think.
To me, I mean, I realized the other day that people always say, well, you should have been born blah, blah, blah back then because things were so good. But I realized my year of birth gave me punk rock when I was 17 and VHS when I was 20. I was the exact right age for both. And in terms of VHS, to add on to what was said, is that in Sweden, there was some pretty severe censorship in terms of violence and splatter films and stuff like that. So there was this amazing society of film or VHS collectors who swapped tapes. And I mean, look at what we have on Cult Picks now. They are first generation tapes. But what we got was like fourth, fifth generation tapes. You could barely make out what was happening in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but you had it in your hands.
And you could trade it and swap it and sort of illicitly enjoy it with your friends and then pass it on. But as a format, I mean, it was never high quality. It was boxy. It took up a lot of space. I mean, the amount of porn I could store on a thumb drive now would have taken me, you know, boxes and boxes before. Mm. And my God, that wasn't easy to hide, I tell you.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Also, if you tried to stack them up, boy, they fall over faster than a paperback. You know, there's nothing more annoying than a stack of VHSs that you knock over. Mm. Because there's something about the shape of them, but they're just really awkward. You can't really grab them. They slide all over each other. They're about as bad as CD boxes. Mm. But something more irritating about them is like they're so big and bulky, and you hate them for being big and bulky.
I mean, actually, our DVD company, Club Super 8, started out 20 years ago. So we started out with VHS. And I remember our warehouse and also handling them, sending them out to customers. It was a nightmare. Sending out a DVD, you know, it's nothing.
No. But they did have one redeeming feature, like, which was the spine. It's a proper spine. You can see the name, the title, you know, even if you're not a bad vision. And, you know, cover art, good too, obviously, because it replicated the film poster or, you know, Men in Dune. But above all, it allowed people to discover films that didn't play at the cinema, or they could record films or copy films.
You could share with your friends. Yeah.
All of that. So, and there was something magic in the 80s about it, because there was an explosion of output, because before the studios wised up to the fact of just how much money they could make from, as the industry called it, packaged home media, or as we call it, DVDs and VHS, they would not release the big Ghostbusters and whatnot on VHS. So obviously the kind of films that appeared on VHS were of the, shall we say, kind of lower budget, lower quality. And those are the kind of films which will be celebrating today. But before we do, I want to flag one more thing, which is in researching this, I came across an Instagram account of a company or an outfit, something called Kadi Video, K-A-D-I Video, which seem to put up VHSs of current films, or at least they make very, very good fakes of VHS covers of current films, like The Batman. And I'm wondering, is this a kind of, you know, is this the new vinyl? Is it going to be the ultimate snob things like, oh, I see, you've got Top Gun Maverick on Blu-ray or 4K. Well, guess what? I've got the VHS. So, ha. Huh.
Well, I do a crayon a drawing of it. No, what's interesting about that particular account is that it has a really huge following. It's got 54,000 followers on the account that you're referring to. And I think it really is a longing for the album covers of yore. I mean, also, there's the kitsch retro value, the sort of idea that you're smarter than everybody else that's just going and downloading stuff. But again, I mean, for those of us that grew up with albums, we miss the visuals. We miss the inside stuff to read. And so at least VHS has more to look at and more to read.
I mean, even if it should be fan art only, it's still such a great idea. And it reminds me, I mean, first of all, obviously the VHS era gave us directors like Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez and whatnot, because they watched a lot of old films on VHS, which they hadn't been able to before. But in Sweden, we had
Quentin even worked in a VHS
store. Yeah. Famously. But in Sweden, there was an official film release on VHS of the film Kung Fury in 2015. And obviously that's a film very much inspired by the 80s. And it was a very limited edition thing, and just very cool that they made a real VHS. And when I looked it up for the year today, I found, which is wonderful, that Kung Fury 2 is now in post-production and starring, apart from the director, actor David Sandberg, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Michael Fassbender and David Hasselhoff. So that's something to look forward to, speaking of VHS.
I can't wait to swap the tape with
you. Yeah,
it's the only way to watch it, I feel. I've even got a VHS plugged in some old television somewhere. But wrapping up this sort of reminiscing, as I learned a new word in researching this, which is anemoia. anemoia, which is a noun, stands for nostalgia for a time you've never known. So all the millennials and Gen Zers watching Stranger Things and other things with a kind of retro VHS feel, never having actually held one of these bulky tapes in their hand, that's what they're suffering from, amongst other things.
I love that word. And I think that nostalgia is everything these days with all the crisis we face. It was also an interesting thing when you thought this season up, that we found that the films were sort of dividing themselves into different food groups. For instance, there was these dance-off films and also a bunch of cannibal films. And that was really interesting to me.
Well, the cannibals are very, very trendy now. Very, very trendy. I just got back from Venice. And Bones and All is a big...
Timothée Chalamet.
A big young adult movie that is romantic, but with cannibalism. And it sounds a bit odd, but I mean, I was just thinking that this is a really hot topic now, and people are going to delve back into that particular subject.
Yeah, so we have a couple of them.
And you were the one who spotted these, so this is where you've got the pattern recognition set to 10. But yes, we did go for a few different genres. Dance-off was one. We went for cannibal was the other one. Erotic thriller. And finally, cheesy 80s comedy. Yeah. So out of the 21 films that we programmed in that month, we've pulled out 7 that we thought were worthy of at least a cursory mention and a slight delving into. So as you mentioned, we started off with Britt Ekland. And we did a double bill of her, no less, because she had 2 films coming out in 1983. Dr. Yes, The Hyenas Affair and Erotic Images. And we're going to talk a little bit about Dr. Yes, The Hyenas Affair, because for anybody who's seen even a few minutes of it and know what it's about, it's just a mind-blowing concept. First of all, Britt Ekland, got notable roles, Man with a Golden Gun, Wicker Man, in the 70s. Come the 80s, as you put it out, she's hit the tragic age of 40, and the roles must have just shriveled up because she was reduced to doing this. And it's especially the Dr. Yes, The Hyenas Affair. Terrible, terrible name. Apparently, Hyenas is a place in Massachusetts. And I, there is no good way of describing it. I think we just have to play the opening clip and narration from it to give people a flavor of what it is that they're potentially setting themselves up for when watching this.
Dr. Yes is a novel for television, but it could be a true story. Susanna Tipaldi is a beautiful, domineering heiress.
Say it. Say it.
Unwillingly passing the winter in the cold of Hyannis, Massachusetts. A vain, pleasure-seeking creature. She forces her young gigolo doctor husband, Paolo, to give her shots to preserve her Scandinavian beauty. But not even her stunning appearance can keep Paolo from seeking the companionship of other women. Into this world of tension and conflict returns Susanna's plain, immature daughter, Louisa, haunted by the memory of her mother seducing her one true love. Paolo, trapped, angry, a helpless victim. Louisa, damaged, betrayed, hungry for love. And Susanna, the bitch goddess, controlling their destiny. They are the idle rich with time on their hands and sex on their minds. It's right out of today's headlines. Dr. Yes, The Hyenas Affair.
I don't know if either you've had chance to actually watch this or see a clip of it, but this is one of those films I'd like to do a reaction video for, because... I mean, how would you describe it, or how would you pitch it as a concept or as a film?
I mean, the fact that it starts off with the total spoiler of everything is quite amazing, I must say. It's like giving you the it was the butler who did it. Go home. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, I mean, I think there's something appealing about that. I mean, if you know what's going to happen, like Titanic, I mean, you're going to watch it anyway. Granted, generally you can when you're watching a movie, and I try not to. you can guess what the ending's going to be. But I did a little bit of research here, and Hyannis is actually a very sort of she place, you know, in America. But it was the village was named after Eyenoch, a sachem of the Kumukib tribe. There you go. When somebody says Hyannis to you, it seems very sort of, I associate it with the Kennedys. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. But it's quite a classy name, strange name.
But to me, the whole film feels like one of those Brazilian telenovelas or something like that, but with nudity.
Yes. The aesthetic is definitely the 1980s daytime soap opera. Not forget Dallas or Falcon Crest, where they were shooting with actual film. This is, you know, shot on video with camera always set at, you know, chest height, moving around, you know, to get, you know, 40 minutes worth of taping done in an afternoon, except it's got nudity. So it's suddenly like people popping boobs out at your, you know, old auntie's favorite afternoon soap. And it's got the cheesy music and cheesy dialogue and everything and nudity and actresses of the caliber of not just Britt Ekland, but we got Stephanie Grant and Susanna Barker, who did do some good stuff. But it's just bizarre.
Where was it going to air?
But it has to be. It must have sold on. Well, obviously, it was out on VHS. And as we'll get to, there were certain cable channels where nipples were not an issue in the 80s. But who it was targeted, because it seems the plot is straight out of something of Mills and Boone. It's a, you know, cheap erotic thriller, soap opera thriller. So I, at some point, would love to dig down more deeper into this. I don't know if it's worth it, but it's just, are there other films like this out there is what I want to know, or was this a unicorn?
I want to do a remake.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure there's quite a few out there that are very, very similar, if not identical. I think the difference here is the cast, probably. And, you know, that's a real grabber, but also you're thinking, well, how many things can we use to hook people? I think that's what it is. You know, it's got sex, it's got nudity, it's got that 80s thing, and there's nothing here that's going to push anybody away.
I want to know, is could it be, you know, somebody got hold of a daytime television soap opera set that's like, right, we've got the cameras, don't need to buy film, we just buy video, we'll get in these actresses, you know, we'll get the cinematographer or, you know, whoever does it, shoots it normally to sort of work incognito on the weekend, and we'll shoot, you know, a deep fake nudie version of a daytime soap opera.
I mean, why not? That's, they did it with the Here Come the Berserkers, this Swedish film where they just found a Viking set and they wrote the script in an afternoon.
In Yugoslavia.
And then they did it.
Yeah, that's right. There's the Kirk Douglas, the longboats, was it?
Longships,
Well, if you think about what's going to cost the most, I mean, outside of catering and transport, and then the star, I mean, if you can get a set... If it's amortized, as they say, then yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense. It's like saying, hey, we'll just put the show on in the barn and my mom can make the costumes.
Yeah, not many costumes needed either, because we're going to focus on them without costumes. So, Dr. Yes, Hyannis Affair, 1983, Britt Ekland. She did go on to do better things, but this one is not something that she will be putting prominently in her biography, I'm sure. So from nudie soap operas on to dance-offs and aerobic madness with our next film, The Heavenly Bodies, 1984. Let's begin by playing the trailer, which sets the scene and pays homage quite blatantly.
Welcome to the world of heavenly bodies. A world that pulsates to the rhythm of rock and romance. A world where body language speaks louder than words.
A big health club has just bought your building out from under you.
What health club?
Jack Pearson's Sporting Life. They're giving you 30 days to clear out.
Jack Pearson's Sporting Life is closing down Heavenly Bodies.
It was a business decision to make a terrific parking lot.
I'm challenging you to a competition. The best in your club against the best in our club.
Ready?
Those pulsating 80s tunes just make me want to put on a sweatband and start stretching.
I actually enjoyed what I watched of Heavenly Bodies, unfortunately. I fell asleep. But you know, the really great thing about this is I didn't realize, and Heavenly Bodies shows you that you don't have to be Jennifer Beal, Jane Fonda, or anybody else to do this. You could be an ordinary person and and look like you go to the gym. I mean, you could put on this and, you know, show off your camel toe and have a great time. And I think there was something really inspiring about Heavenly Bodies, because normally we see this in really very, very high production value sort of shoots, you know, as far as the era goes. But this one was pretty grotty, and you thought, wow, I just need to put a stretchy thing on my head and some leg warmers and I'm there.
I mean, to me, leg warmers and shoulder pads, that is spells the 80s to me. So this is very much you know, a gem from its time.
And the amazing thing is, back then we really thought they were really cool and sexy, and now we look at them with puzzlement. I think, why did, it's like those pictures of yourself, you look back and you think, I thought that haircut looked good. You know, what happened to us? Why did we think that was good? Why did we think it was sexy and hot and fun?
It's because those films were shot by Adrian Lyne or Tony Scott, who could make every shot look like $1 million, even a gritty Detroit, you know, strip club or dance studio or something. This one definitely wasn't. This one is definitely blue collar through and through, and proud of it too. And all the more real for it. And again, we keep banging home this point, but the lower the budget, the more authentic the films were, and the more of a time capsule, because they showed things as they were, because they couldn't afford to dress it up, build a big set, and shoot in a very, very fancy way. This was more likely of what they were wearing. Although, of course, this one with apparently a limitless number of leotards.
I think what you're saying now is really could be part of the mission statement of Cult Pics. The films, the low-budget exploitation films, were actually more accurate to the times, because they didn't shoot in studios. They shoot in real environments, in real streets. And that's part of the beauty.
Yes. True cinema verite. Yeah. This is the real truth. This is our truth, not stylized truth. But and it's again, the dance off and the aerobics that has lived on. I don't know if either of you have watched, there's an Apple TV series called Physical, which is harks back to this era about a downtrodden suburban housewife who finds herself in a Jane Fonda kind of workout studio, and it builds on the kind of Netflix film series like Glow. So it's definitely part of that whole 80s wave of retro nostalgia. But this is the real thing. Moving on from aerobic studios to Hollywood hot tubs, 1984.
The title.
This is...
Yeah.
It kind
great.
Of...
It's a great title. You didn't have to look at a hot tub time machine. You know, anytime you mention hot tub. Also, if you want to see something really good, go to Saturday Night Live, NBC on YouTube, and look up Eddie Murphy doing his imitation of James Brown getting in a hot tub on stage. There's something wonderful about a hot tub. It's not only fun and exciting, but it's also, in this case, glamorous and sexy.
Oh, I remember you sent me that clip. Yeah. It is a great clip. Definitely check it out if you haven't seen it already. But so for Hollywood Hot Tubs, rather than playing a trailer or a clip from it, I thought I'd found a fun introduction to it, which wasn't on VHS, but it was actually on late night cable, introduced by the divine Rhonda Shear, late night television personality with a bit of a cult following herself. And it sets the tone for the kind of film that it is and the kind of ways that it was seen. So let's play the clip from USA Up All Night cable channel introducing Hollywood Hot Tubs from 1984.
Hi, it's Rhonda, and I'm all pumped up about tonight's two sexy movies. Next on USA Up All Night.
Mmm.
Before we get on to the film itself and the stars and the director, want to talk a little bit about late night cable, where this kind of film was shown, because of course that was the dark twin and the other alternative to VHS. Usually, if not USA, cable TV is Cinemax, was apparently the other one that was the go-to place for these kind of films in the 80s in the United States. Kitty, any personal memories, or do you recall... You were too innocent to tune into those kind of channels late night.
No, we always did. I mean, you know, always. You didn't want to play it safe. You know, you wanted to see everything. And I think that's the compulsion that you have, particularly with VHS and also things from cult picks. You don't want to be surprised. You want to be able to say, oh, yeah, I've seen that. So, yeah, of course, you would tap into the seamy underbelly of late night cable, generally hosted or curated by somebody quite questionable. But the great thing is it always had terrible advertisements, which have gone down in history. You'd watch the shows and think, wow. And then the ads would be equal, like you're in a completely different universe.
Are they the kind of local adverts where Crazy Al is selling the cars at crazy prices, you know?
Sure. Some of them. I still remember the carpet. I think the carpet people in Chicago still, Empire Carpets. I think I could still remember their phone number. But there were also things, comedians would make fun of these. For example, Robert Klein, who was a stand-up of the probably 70s and 80s, used to do takeoffs on... the every song ever written right here in your, where they would sell those huge record collections. That was one of the things. You'd always get those, or vegetable peelers.
Mm.
Is that just where I grew up, or did you have that experience as well?
I think that was on QVC. I saw more of that. But yeah, it was definitely that. But the beauty of these kind of cable channels is, for those of us who weren't old enough, is thanks to VHS, we could time shift. We could record them, if we figured out how to program the darn thing, to watch it at a later time, or trade them for other VHS films in the schoolyard of equally questionable late night quality films. This one stars the delectable Jewel Shepherd, B-movie queen. I think I actually have her biography, a book that I read somewhere eons ago. And she was also the star of the follow-up, Hollywood Hot Tubs 2, Educating Jewel, of which I have not been able to find a good copy. There's a Spanish subtitled version floating around the internet, and there's a Laserdisc on eBay that I'm tempted to buy, even though it's going to cost me more to ship it over than to buy it. But anyway, there seemed to be this film seemed to split people into two groups. They either love it or hate it, not because it's genius, but because some appreciate it for its qualities and some really, really hate it. Everything. Some have a go at poor Jewel Shepherd for not being able to do a Valley Girl impression. How hard can that be? Surely hers is acceptable. She's also the only one, probably in the film, who doesn't get her kit off. You actually never see her sweater puppies, but they're jiggling away there under her cut-off t-shirt. So I think they're just feeling frustrated and, ripped off for not getting the whole enchilada with the film. Who is in the film and who does get her kit off, on the other hand, is Edie Williams. And she was a very popular B actress. And more importantly, she was married to cult director extraordinaire Russ Meyer. And so she had a career that was built on portraying sexpot on the nymphomaniac end of the spectrum. And she did it very, very believably. So perfect for this film.
Isn't that how they want actors to be now? If she was a nymphomaniac, she should play it, just as you cannot play anything else than yourself these days.
True. Yes.
Could be the first example.
Gender orientation, race,
exactly.
Whatever, and lean into it. Don't come taking other, and. What's lovely about the film is also it's hit and miss, But for a low budget film like that, it does have a certain zaniness, especially the last 30 minutes, which somebody compared to the ending of What's New Pussycat. And we're going to get to him a bit later. It is one of the first films here on the list, directed by Chuck Vincent. And I'm going to discuss him a bit later on because we've got two more of his films coming up. But Hollywood Hot Tubs, Part One. For those of you that haven't seen it, do try to track it down if you can't see it on Colpix.
I think the next film you picked up,
Moving
which is
on.
not really a film, I don't understand where you found
Nope.
it, but this must be one of the most unique findings in Cultpix ever.
Yeah, I did have responses online to people going WTF, genuinely. And again, we talk about Britt Ekland's career hitting a nadir in the 80s. She was joined in the valley of bad roles by Linda Blair, who started out so promisingly as that green vomit puker. Where did things go wrong after that for her, Kitty?
Well, I think she had a problem with, number one, having a great hit that was a horror film. And I think also because she was so young and quite wholesome, trying to move a career on from that point, I think was very much a challenge. And perhaps she was given some poor advice about what roles to take next.
I mean, she did
I
like
think
Women in
definitely would
Prison
have.
films. She did a lot of weird stuff.
Yes. That's right. Yeah, maybe
Yeah.
she felt there was no place else for her to go. I mean, not everybody's going to have, a Brooke Shields or a Jodie Foster kind of career. And at that time, there weren't really any templates for that. You either had this hit, you stayed in your lane, or you quit the business. I mean, Shirley Temple Black went on to be an ambassador. So it's
Yeah.
I think she was a real forerunner, and I also think that she's a great example of someone that probably could have been managed a little bit better. But who
Yeah.
knew at that point what was going to be successful and what wasn't?
Did I tell you my story of Linda Blair, by the way? That I met her.
Oh, tell it again.
I tell it again. Someone might have heard it, but I was at a sci-fi convention in Stockholm maybe 10 years ago when she was one of the guests, and there was a big dinner for all the guests, and the guy who plays Lando Calrissian was there too, and I think Maude Adams was there, and Christina Lindbergh was there. And it ended up a disaster because the waiter couldn't tell Linda Blair if the food was vegan or vegetarian. So she ran off in tears, and the organizers had to run after and see to it that she got her vegan food. And that was
I
kind of a surprise, I would say. And then I heard
you
that,
couldn't
and
just
this
have
is also
said
kind of
or told her that.
I think this is kind of typical also for some former elderly stars, that they are into animal protection and animal shelters. So all of the money Linda Blair earns in these conventions, they go to her dog shelter.
Right. Wow. Wow.
Good for her.
Good for the
Yeah.
dogs.
And the dogs. I just think they should have just given her the meal, said it was vegan, and then told it's vegetarian and watched the green spew come
It's
forward.
because you're
You're
evil
horrible,
and mean.
horrible.
That's
I am
why.
so
Poor
human.
thing. She's had a bad
Well,
enough life. Look at this movie.
she could have got her own back at me because this film that she did, How to Get Revenge, was just that. It is a how-to instruction on how to get revenge. So why don't we start off by playing the intro?
Hi, I'm Linda Blair, welcoming you to How to Get Revenge. During this program, you are going to become quite literally an expert in the field of revenge. Now, when I talk about revenge, I'm not talking about bodily injury to anybody. I mean, that is definitely not our purpose here. Our aim is to simply inform you of the options you have to make that person experience the same humiliation, the same mental anguish that they inflicted on you. You are going to learn dozens of tricks of the trade from some of the top experts in the field, including private investigators, former police officers, and other virtuosos of vindication. You will also discover invaluable techniques of retribution, some simple, some more elaborate, but all designed to obtain the goals you desire. And you will also see and hear fascinating stories from people just like you, who were at one time victimized, yet came back to achieve the ultimate revenge. Let's face it, revenge can be sweet. especially when it's against someone who really deserves it. And I'm sure we all know a few of those, right? Former friends, lovers, business associates, family members. The list is virtually limitless.
She then goes on with suggestions that include mailing human excrement to the intended victim, breaking into their home, or calling immigration services should the victim happen to be foreign. All in sort of jokey comedy, but played in straight face, and it just makes for a very strange feeling. I mean, okay, she doesn't advocate swatting them, as is the craze now, but this is way, way too helpful, and I'm sure most of it is technically legal, or would be now, probably even in 1984 when it was made. But it does have a strange kind of appeal, dark fascination, just because of its sheer weirdness. Not sure how they dreamt it up, but the director, Bob Logan, did go on to direct Linda Blair in something more straightforward, Repossessed, the horror films, and even did Meatballs 4, which I never got beyond the second one, so couldn't tell you how good that was.
But yeah, I really would have liked to see those script meetings where they were like discussing back and forth. We should really do this. This could be a big thing. You never understand these things.
Because in Reagan's America, you know, getting a revenge was obviously a big thing. And the best way was, you know, not going to a library and asking for, you know, a book on how to get revenge. It's, you know, seeing this in the side aisle in the Blockbusters video. How to Get a Revenge with Linda Blair from 1984. Since Blockbuster days, VHS's has obviously not yet hit the kind of vinyl moment, but I know, and I've seen to myself, way too many charity shops where they're actually not even selling them for, you know, a quid each. They're giving them away. And the next film is one that I believe you, Smut Peddler, picked up for, was it Next to Nothing or Absolutely Nothing?
It was Absolutely Nothing, along with 10 other old VHS tapes. I was really surprised that you can't even sell them for, you know, a euro cent. It's weird. So they are just filling the shelves and they have to get rid of them in the thrift shops. And this one had the immediate appeal to me because, first of all, it says Underground Aces is the title. It's from 1981. And on the cover is Michael Winslow, who's the guy from Police Academy who can make all these funny noises with his mouth. And I was like, okay, so and it says like Michael Winslow from Police Academy. And I said, okay, I'll pick this up. And then I started watching it. And it's basically, I guess it's like a kind of ripoff of Car Wash, but here it's parking attendants in the basement of a hotel. And it's a comedy. But the interesting thing is that Michael Winslow might have 5 minutes of screen time in the whole film. But he's the name that they sold it on. And looking on, Googling the film, most of the VHS covers have him on the cover. While it actually stars Dirk Benedict, who was, you know, a big name from the A-Team. Melanie Griffith, who, she was very young at the time and she hadn't become a star yet. And to me, being a Batman TV series fan, Frank Gorshin, the original Riddler, is like the hotel detective in a very, very silly role. And what he does is he has this cigarette trick that he does like 50 times in the film and supposedly funny. But I watched the whole thing on VHS and it looked, well, pretty good for being like a what is it, 40-year-old VHS tape?
It looked, depending on when it came out, but the film is definitely more than 40 years old.
It looks pretty good. And so that's the kind of flea market gold I love to find. And of course, then watching it and in this day and age with all the culture wars going on, I mean, this is basically the kind of comedy that, you know, it was legit back in the time. But it's so sexist, it's so racist. And I mean, there's like jokes about Islam, there are jokes about Hispanics and obviously girls, and it's all about getting laid. These garage attendants, they want to get laid all the time. And it's super ridiculous. And watching it with the glasses of today, it's like, it's mind-boggling watching a movie like this.
This is contraband.
You haven't clocked that Ernie Hudson is also in it. Ernie Hudson from Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right.
As African general. Oh, yeah. That's his role. And don't forget, this is, as much as we want to poo-poo these films, or particularly this one.
No.
I mean, it's a concept film. Granted, it's a low concept film. It's got some tremendous performers. Head scratching though it might be sometimes, like Frank Gorshin. I mean, a wonderful ball of energy. Mm. And Melanie Griffith is the daughter of one of Hitchcock's favorite leading ladies, Tippi Hedren.
Indeed.
So. This has actually got a lot of Hollywood royalty in it, really. Mm. And it's interesting to see them, you know, as Stevie Nicks says, players only love you when they're playing, and actors like to act. And that's why we end up with things like this, because you never know when you're going to have a hit with something that seems ridiculous on paper. It just didn't work out that way this time.
I had a good time watching it. I mean, it was entertaining. It's just that time has really moved on since this film.
Where's Murphy?
He's on his lunch break.
I've only got an hour.
Huh?
Yeah. Can I help?
I need a woman.
Join the club. What about Lucy?
Forget it.
Oh, no, I mean a real woman.
Oh.
You see, whenever I'm about to close a big sale, I get itchy.
What business you in?
Crockpots. There's another 10 spot in it, if you help. Yeah. No skinny models either. I need somebody I can hold on to.
Okay, what's going on here? Get him his car, will you?
He doesn't want a car, Mr. Kruger. He wants
whatever he wants. Get it for him.
But we're going to have to start providing some good old-fashioned personalized service around here from now on. Ah.
We now come to my favorite film of the lot, and one that I think has stood up remarkably well, could even be subject for a remake, Cleo Leo from 1989. Which is a gender switch comedy, so I guess that would be topical. And it's about this horrible, horrible man, really terrible chauvinist pig of a middle-aged white guy who just behaves atrociously, not just around women, but in general, and gets punished because he hits on the wrong kind of woman and she fires back, literally shoots him, falls in a river, and when he emerges, he is transformed, not his mind's still chauvinist pig, but his body, which is a beautiful woman played by Veronica Hart. And it's an amazingly obscure film, but people who've seen it genuinely love it. And it was written and directed by Chuck Vincent, who I've mentioned before, but he was remarkable because he did a lot of adult films. However, he also did a lot of films for the kind of Cinemax and VHS B-movies, comedies like Hollywood Hot Tubs, erotic thrillers. Cleo and Leo was, I suppose, erotic comedy. One of the amazing things, though, about him is that he tended to use the same actors, whatever he filmed, whether he was filming an adult, triple X feature, or he was doing a comedy. And what I love about it is the fact that it shows that a lot of the adult stars actually had real acting chops. In this case, although she's credited as Jane Hamilton, it is Veronica Hart in the lead. And you had several other ones, which we're going to hear about in the next and final film. But I just love the fact, and I know that we're later on this order, I'm going to talk about one actor in particular, Harry Reams, spoiler there, who definitely had that kind of, not just, he could deliver wood on camera, but he also had a funny, sweet goofiness, good acting, bit of kind of like an adult Steve Martin. And the same is true for many of these actors. And I think that we've had gender switch comedies like Blake Edwards, famous one. I'm losing my way in the notes here. But I feel in some ways this one actually does it better. And the fact that it does it better than Switch, which was the name of it, on a lower budget with mostly a bunch of adult actors and actresses, crappy sets, it's a genuinely enjoyable film. And I've been talking way too long.
And really terrible music, yeah. Though. Really terrible music. Really, probably the worst music I have ever heard. Give me a child trapped in its room with a Casio. This is just awful. Absolutely awful. And it ruined it for me because I like to see a woman driving a car, smoking a cigarette. Chomping on a cigar. I like to see a woman with big shoulder pads smack somebody in the jaw. I mean, in this context, I suppose, as part of the story. Not terribly violent, but I was enjoying this. And I have to say, the music just wrecked it for me.
Well, it was the 80s, but yeah, it's, I guess the money ran out before he could hire composers, so he probably must have recycled some music from one of his XXX films.
Here a little segue regarding the porn actors in the regular films. Veronica Hart was actually also in Boogie Nights. And I forgot about that.
Yeah, of course, lots of them.
And she, along with Nina Hartley and John Doe and Little Cinderella and a bunch of others. And then I realized, as you said, that they were, some of them were quite talented actors, but obviously they shot a lot of film, lots and lots and lots of hours in front of the camera with very low budgets. They must be ideal to cast because they can deliver. I mean, not just the sex, but the lines as well.
One take.
And then I realized that it's similar to the very new and much discussed Swedish film Pleasure, by Ninja Tyberg, which actually stars most of these internet porn stars that are currently, So it's,
I think it's on Mubi.
Yeah.
But that's a beautifully made film. I mean, that's got really high production values and everything looks great.
And better music.
I mean, it's stunning. Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, better Lycra. Everything's better. I mean, it's a stunning movie and it's beautifully handled. And it's, I was not expecting something that good. But I think you're right, actually, Smut Peddler.
It is true, though, that porn actors or adult actors have to deliver. And I read about, there was a reality TV show in the US. I didn't watch it. I did read about it, though. Where they took a bunch of adult actors, and they put them through a Shakespeare course. And it was, of course, a reality TV show where only one could win in the end. So she gets to star in a Shakespeare in the Park production of something. But, we shouldn't dismiss them. I'm not saying that there's a thin line between regular acting and adult acting. And I know that we've had adult actors who've crossed over into mainstream, but very, very few of them. And mostly in kind of novelty ways, Tracy Lords springs to mind.
Very few went back and forth between the genres.
Well, again, it's a stigma, isn't it? That you've got to be one thing or the other. And if people watch you in a mainstream film, having sort of got your kid off, same as Sharon Stone will always, can never escape the leg crossing from Basic Instinct, no matter how many good roles she did after that. Which is sad.
Leo wanted to be number one, America's foremost male chauvinist, so he practiced at work.
You keep your job, you keep the boss happy. Capiche?
And he practiced at home.
I got us steaks. That kitchen's back there, I like mine red.
He was a real swinger on a winning streak.
To us.
Living out his fantasies. The top dog, macho man of action. Then, under a full moon, he finally met his match.
Hey, what are you doing for the rest of your life?
A woman of wit.
Dead.
He went down as Leo and came up as Cleo.
We're ending with Bad Blood from 1989, so we've completed the genre hopping of these only ever released on VHS non-classics. Again, another Chuck Vincent film, but this one a horror film, and in some ways it kind of foreshadows Misery, Stephen King's. And it's about a man who finds out that his biological mother actually is alive, and he goes to see her, brings along the missus to meet her. And this is a very, very bad idea, because the mother has this crazy idea that the long-lost biological son is his father reincarnated. So obviously the wife needs to be gotten rid of off the scene, and she needs to make the most of having her hubby back, even if it means tying him up in bed. Why don't we start out by listening to a clip of just when that happens.
I'm looking forward to meeting you, Arlene. Mr. Barnes.
Arlene.
Jack.
Shh, Arlene.
On the phone. Oh, yes. I hope you don't mind my boring you for a few days. Good.
Arlene,
oh, no,
let me...
Please try. It's been nice talking to you, too. Bye-bye. Good morning, darling. Sleep well?
What is this?
Well, breakfast, silly. Can't you see?
Why am I tied?
Here, open wide.
Come on, Arlene.
Oh, Joe, don't be like that. Now, I spent all morning fixing your favorite breakfast. Take a bite.
No.
You're such a picky eater, Joe. Now, here, eat. I'm going to have to punish you for that, Joe. No more food for a week. How's that?
I don't know if any listener is very good at identifying voices of actors, but that was none other than Georgina Spelvin playing the mother, and Randy Spears as the tied up and fully dressed son. Georgina Spelvin, of course, being famous from Quiz Time.
Right. Devil in Miss Jones.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Even I knew
what
that.
Even I knew that.
But, you know, her real name, well, because I'm, you know what, I may watch it, but I don't know all the names. And her real name is Shelley Bob Graham.
That is so not porn. Mm.
Shelley Bob.
Hey, Bob.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shelley Bob. Yep, couldn't decide. We thought she was going to be a girl. I mean, we thought.
So mom and dad could choose one name
we
each.
Just prepared for everything.
Yeah. I'm starting to suspect Randy Spears might not be what his Sunday school teacher called him when he was growing up as well. Although I haven't Googled
it's a good
what
name.
His real name
Randy
was.
Randy Spears, okay.
It is definitely a poor name. So, yeah. But again, not a terrible actor in this piece. Yeah, I wouldn't say that he's up there with James Caan in terms of being, you know, tied up to a bed by a psycho woman. But he definitely gives it his best. And what's interesting, it's not just adult actors. He did mix them up, Chuck Vincent. So the wife, his wife in this, is played by, callback, Linda Blair, who's being poisoned, obviously because she was fed a vegetarian rather than vegan meal. Looking very sickly in bed, but never quite going the full vomit route in this. And again, if you want a, you know, cheesy little horror thriller, you could do a lot worse than Bad Blood. And again, I think this
I'm really wanting to go to a Linda Blair segment at the Venice Film Festival or the Cannes Film Festival. I'm beginning to feel very sorry for her now. I'm sure she's if you gave her a better role.
Yeah.
I mean, she's working so much. Her craft must be well honed.
Well, and if you do enough films, you know, you will land some gems. And there's definitely maybe something we should do. We should do a Linda Blair retrospective.
Definitely, yeah.
God knows we've had enough of her different films, and we've had other people, I wouldn't say less deserving, but, you know, she is deserving. Wrapping it up here, again, with a bit of a Chuck Vincent appreciation, because I do want to make the case for him being a bit of the auteur of VHS, because of the fact that he did go between genres quite freely. Of course, he did all the adult films, and one of whom is Roommates, which regularly gets voted as one of the best adult films of all time. I mean, you two, you've both recently been doing top 10 list of best films of all time, didn't you, Kitty?
I didn't put Roommates
on. No.
No. And mine was Swedish films
that
only.
Surprising. Yes. disqualifies them.
Yes, I did the Sight and Sound one. Yeah, that's right. I did do the
I
sight
actually
and sound
saw one filmmaker in the US, a female filmmaker who's really into genre films, and she was like, I have to put in all the like underground exploitation movies just for the balance of it, whatever if I think they're the best ones or not, but they really should be in there in that canon of classics by Orson Welles and stuff like that. I think that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of Discovery, I think that lists are pretty stupid overall. I mean, it's different to say, let's pick out top 10 of Linda Blair or whatever. But, you know, the 10 greatest films of all time is just ridiculous. It's really obscene and almost meaningless. But when it comes to really discovering something new, then I think a list is important. And also, I mean, just like what Cult Pix is doing and what we're doing on this podcast is just opening up things that people may not have known about or forgotten. And I think that that's important. No matter
and
what
also
the
doing
is.
Thematical things. It's a bit like lists as well, isn't it? Just to get the genres in there or actors or directors, whatever.
Yeah, and Roommates is one of those. Well, again, I haven't seen it. It is in the top 10. I'm sure it's on X Hamster, but it hasn't yet been given the Vinegar Syndrome treatment, which I'm sure it should be.
Yeah.
Because although apparently it's one of those films because it's got good acting, it's got a plot, it's watchable. The sex is actually, I think, a bit depressing, I've read, although it's hardcore full on. And it's got, you know, great actors. But this was the kind of pinnacle of Chuck Vincent, because he did work a lot with actors such as, obviously, Veronica Hart was one of them, Samantha Fox, not the British one, Jamie Gillis, and other ones. And then he'd switch then to, you know, the kind of lowbrow comedies like Summer Camp or Preppies, Hollywood Hot Tubs, obviously, Sex Appeal. And shock horror films like Deranged, 1987, which is one we wanted to, but we haven't been able to secure or locate the rights for that one, because it's a, it could have featured into our Harry Reams retrospective.
Right.
Interestingly, it was a film that Fox turned down the opportunity to distribute precisely because it had an adult actor, Harry Reams, in a leading role. So there you go. The reason they didn't cast adult actors is because they were penalized.
Oh, the stigma.
In terms of distribution.
For sure. Oh, and going back to Vinegar Syndrome and what we did last summer, because we all had our little vacation. Last weekend, I arranged a film collectors convention in a cinema in the countryside. And I have sniffed some Vinegar Syndrome film prints there. So that's kind of interesting.
You mean actual?
Yeah, the thing. The actual
cans
thing.
Of films were deteriorating.
Yeah, the salad dressing.
As opposed to the label.
So that was interesting, speaking of old formats.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Some people, like Kitty, go off to the Venice Film Festival, and other people go to Film Collectors Convention in the woods and sniff vinegar cans. So we've got the full spectrum here.
Just as legit.
Definitely.
Just as legit, yeah.
Well, the VHS Nostalgia Fest retrospective is drawing to an age, as was the 80s, as sadly was the career of Chuck Vincent, who died at the age of 51 from AIDS complications in Florida. Mm. But who knows, maybe we'll do a retrospective of him. I definitely, for one, want to champion his work. So any final VHS thoughts in this nostalgia-heavy return of Cult Pix Radio? Smut Peddler?
Yeah, from time to time I see people posting on Facebook different film posters, and the other day someone posted The Arena, which is a film, which is a sword and sandal film with Pam Grier, and that's something I rented and watched when I was 21, 22, and I really, really want to see it again. So brings back memories, and we really got to find the rights for that film. I guess it has a big sort of Roger Corman stamp all over it, so we'll have to check that out.
Definitely will. Kitty Lash?
I'm not really sure. I think it's great that these films still exist, and I don't think everything needs to be digitized. I think there's a certain pleasure in watching things on tape. So I don't have anything in particular, although I do kind of have a little bit of nostalgia for when they get stuck in the player. And then you think, how do I get them out? And you plug it in, you unplug it, you stick knives in there. And sometimes they just never come out. So those are the memories that
that's
I have.
That's true. But it's like really. It's like rewinding a music cassette with a pencil. You know, those sort of very...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to get the right
size
pencil,
too. The very tactile things we had to deal with back in the day. Not just the whatever the internet connection happens to be during this day.
No, that's all right. When, you know, they don't corrupt, but if you got really angry, you would just bite it in half. You'd like take the tape and just bite it and
that's
throw
right.
it out of your car window.
I
Not that,
that
I
yeah.
would do that. Yeah, I've done that, actually.
Well, if you like this episode, feel free to rewind, go back to the beginning, and listen to it all over again for the collected wit and wisdom and insights from me, your host, Django Nudo.
The Smut Peddler.
And
Kitty Nash.
And since Kitty complained about the music of my very, you know, favorite film there, I'm slightly right. We're going to end with some, you know, quality music from the 80s from the film Heavenly Bodies.
Heavenly Bodies, the Beast in Me.
You bring out the beast. You bring out.